Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here in the kitchen once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we come to you through the technical help and the great auspices of KHOI Community Radio. Community Radio brings you fine programming, including us. So, glad you're with us today. A few thoughts here. It's sort of spring, even though it's not very springy today, but my chickens gave me two broken eggs on Saturday, and not broken bad, just kind of, you know, I think they were playing bocce ball or something with them. And so I had two cracked eggs. And when the world and your chickens give you cracked eggs, you make cookies. So that's what I did this weekend. I made cookies. Also, the Winter Olympics are over. And I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief that they are over. I was talking with my friend Megan a couple weeks ago. And when the Olympics were on, and we kind of said, boy, just people doing impossible things, just superhuman. I mean, and we thought we should come up with some Olympic sports that hit a little closer to home and were a little bit more realistic. I mean, can anyone explain bobsledding to me? I don't know. It used to be what children
did for fun.
Right. And I said, what are they doing? And
now it's a breakneck killer sport.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought, well, why don't we use, how about some Midwestern farming-based sort of
thing? The farming Olympics.
So, like
the Paralympics, we could have the farming Olympics.
I thought a really good Olympic sport would be hay baling. I mean, baling hay, it takes skill, it takes muscles, it takes teamwork. You could have the solitary hay baler stacking things up event.
Or like the bale throwing event.
Yeah, or you could have everybody working together as a team to stack it on the wagon and get it into the barn.
Pitchfork contest.
See?
Muckraking.
Muckraking.
Yeah.
Good. I like that. See, anyway, maybe I should send this off to the Olympic Committee. Maybe there's looking to, I think that would be a summer Olympics.
Well, we could be like Prince Harry and start our own Olympics, I guess, right?
Oh, we could do that. Yeah. I like that. Anyway, they're over, folks, until the summer Olympics, I think. All right. Well, looking ahead anyway, I'm getting my seeds have come in the mail, and I'm laying them all out and thinking of planting things and planting the garden. Farmers do work all year. Things are speeding up. Yes, they are. Joining us on the Dunalana kitchen table today is Jill Bebout. Jill and her husband, Sean Sheehan, run Blue Gate Farm. They steward 40 acres of land near Sheraton, Iowa, in southern Marion County. We'll find out how their hard work gets food from farm to table. Welcome, Jill. Glad you could join us.
Good afternoon, ladies, and happy to be here.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about your farm.
So, I came at farming, both Sean and I came at farming from a little bit different perspective. We both worked in the professional live theater world. That's what our degrees are in. So at the very least, we can act like farmers. But neither of us came from farming backgrounds. I was raised in Ankeny. Sean was raised in Denver, Colorado. So we were suburban or city kids. And after spending our early professional lives in theater, we decided we were up for another challenge and ready for something new. And in April of 2005, we moved here to Blue Gate Farm.
Good, good. So how long have you been farming?
Since 2005. So this is our 17th season. And we actually moved here on the 1st of April, which always seems a little unusual and like that was an interesting April Fool's joke.
Ha ha.
But yeah, so we've been here ever since. We are primarily a chemical-free produce farm. So we have 6 acres in vegetables and orchard trees and small fruits. And we steward about 40 acres of my parents' land. And we're a chemical-free farm, so that just makes it all that much more exciting.
Oh, my. Sounds like a lot of work. Oh, yes, and you have fruit trees, too. Do you have, okay, I'm trying to picture this now. Is your farm a flat Iowa farm? Is it a rolling Iowa farm?
We are definitely in the rolling hills of southern Iowa. Our house sits on top of a hill, and everything kind of rolls downhill below that. So my view out my office window, I can see for miles of rolling Iowa countryside. It's a beautiful place to live.
Oh, good. Which means you can roll downhill to work. It's always nice to go downhill. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. But man, when you get to the end of the row, it's a long walk back uphill.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Did your so it's family land. Did you have to build the structures on it, like your house and everything?
We did. So we moved a mobile home onto the property. There was not a home here when we moved here, and started with a little shed of a building that my dad and his brothers had built years ago. And since then have constructed a number of additional buildings, including our packing shed and chicken coops and alpaca sheds and all of those things. But it was pretty much building a farm from scratch.
Very good.
Well, at least you had the land.
Which is a glorious thing. And we are truly here by the generosity and fabulous natures of my family.
Okay. So you run a CSA. So we would like you to explain to our listeners what a CSA is, how you came to it, and kind of how it works for the farmer.
Sure. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it's a model that was established in the 60s in Japan. And what it does is provide the farmer with money up front at the time when most of their expenses are happening, and then the farmer has the liability of paying out vegetables to those members throughout whatever their season is. So our members sign up. They're currently signing up now. Their balance is due by the 1st of May. And then in June, the first week of June, we start delivering a box of produce to all of our member families. And that runs for 20 weeks until mid-October.
Okay. And this model has actually become quite widely available. So you know, whatever your local area is, you probably have a farmer that is doing the same model as Jill. So now is the time to find your local CSAs and sign up. So how did this evolve? Because you started at the farmer's market in Des Moines. I remember 15 years ago you were there.
Yep, that's exactly right. Before we moved here, we connected with PFI, with Practical Farmers of Iowa. We learned about them online. And even while we were still living in Texas, I came up for the PFI conference, which happens in January of every year. And while I was there, I was lucky enough to meet Angela Tedesco, who owned the first CSA in Iowa, and started learning about it from her, and then Gary Guthrie and some other of the early adopters of CSA in the state. And they were the ones who really turned me on to that model and were very generous in their information about it.
Well, that is the hallmark of Practical Farmers of Iowa, is sharing farmer-to-farmer information. And it's, especially when you're beginning, very, very helpful. You initially started selling at the Des Moines Farmers Market, right?
We did. Because we were truly novices to vegetable mm-hmm. growing. I mean, we have a very large garden in Houston, but I knew nothing about growing food in Iowa. So you certainly don't want to start as a beginner owing people food. So the farmers market is a much more gentle entry into the produce farming arena. And we were lucky that we were just on the cusp of that push for local foods back in the mid and early 2000s. So we were very fortunate that we managed to get on as a full season vendor our very first year at the Downtown Des Moines Farmers Market. It is no longer possible to do that because there are so many growers out there now. But we were lucky that we were able to make the commitment to be there for the entire season. And it's now a little bit of a joke because literally we moved here on the 1st of April and we were at the opening farmers market 5 weeks later.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
How'd you grow anything? What did you have in your stand?
It was yeah, right. We had that first week, we had my honey from my dad. We had asparagus and rhubarb from my grandpa. And, at that time I was doing, handmade market bags. So we had that. But literally that first market, that was about all that was on. Oh, and some morel mushrooms. But that first year, that was about all, that first market, that was about all that was on the table. By the second market, we had some of our own salad mix and spinach, but looking back on those pictures now, we just shake our heads.
Well, you did maintain a rather large stand at the farmer's market. Always, always beautiful, I must say. And one of my early memories of Jill was that at the market, she was serving a sort of rhubarb lemonade that I was completely taken with. It was really nobody else had it, and I thought, oh, this is an ingenious culinary creation for Iowa in the right season. So, but you don't do the farmer's market anymore.
We don't. We were at the farmer's market for 15 plus seasons, and it was a great run. We loved our time there, but COVID brought a temporary hiatus to the Downtown Des Moines Farmer's Market. And we were very lucky that a number of years ago, we had established a custom order system or program that we were doing for our customers throughout the winter when the farmers market was out of season. So that.
Oh, so you had your internet ordering season already up and running.
We did. We
visionary.
Did. Dumb luck was what it was. What it was we had chickens, and chickens don't shut off when the farmer's market season ends. So we needed to move eggs throughout the winter. And so we originally called it our egg sale list, and our customers during market would sign up to be on that email list. And then every 2 weeks, we would send out an email and say, how many do you want? And we would meet them in central locations in both Knoxville and Des Moines and trade eggs for cash. And then because we had high tunnels, sometimes we had a little produce here and there. And so we started adding that to our offerings. And so we had done that from January till May, because we also had a winter CSA early on. And that we ended up retiring our winter CSA and going all to these off-season egg and produce sales. And then in 2017, we rebranded those as Veggie Mail. And then added Ebersol Cattle Company, a meat producer, and then Lost Lake Cheese. We were able to add them in 2020 so that our customers could come place one order and
so
get their
product.
So you're
where all that cheese is going.
It's so exciting to be able to work with them and to have our customers be able to do that one-stop shopping.
Mm-hmm. How do you do the veggie thing every week all year round?
So yeah, when farmers market was shut down for 2020, we moved that veggie mail system to every week on Saturdays to take that farmers market time slot. And so that runs every week from May through October. And then November through April, we do every 2 weeks. Because that winter produce and those winter products will keep so much better.
So you're all winter long, you're selling storage vegetables?
That's a lot of it. But because I have high tunnels, I produce year round out of those. So we're able to fresh harvest year round.
So what's in your high tunnel? Like salad?
Right now, salad greens. Right now we're just at a transitional time. So I have choy and tatsoi and komatsuna and lettuce mix, arugula, kale, chard, hearty leafy greens, basically.
Goodness, that's a not too shabby list, I gotta say, for the middle of winter.
Very good.
It's pretty awesome. And if anyone has ever had winter grown hearty greens, like the spinaches or the tatsoi, they are so crazy sweet and mild. Yeah. They so outshine the summer versions of those crops that demand for them is pretty high.
Not only do they outshine the summer crops, but they outshine what the rest of Iowa is eating imported from California. We're absolutely so lucky to have local vegetable production in the winter.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's great for us because it allows us to continue to maintain that direct contact with our consumers. And so we still get to see them all year round throughout the winter. And if you want to see people excited about produce, it's our winter produce customer.
I want to get back. You talk about customers. I want to get back to farmers markets and what you learned from your customers. I did farmers market here in Ames for quite a few years, starting back in the mid-90s. And you had this romantic idea of being a farmer and putting this stuff out. But boy, if you listen, the customers will tell you things. What have you learned from your customers?
Oh, that's a great question. One of the things that we joke about is that talking to your customers like that is so important because I maintain that I have no idea what my consumer wants. Every time I think I have a great idea, it is oddly not what my consumers are looking for. They want the connection. They want the connection to the farmer. They want to be able to ask the farmer, what specific variety is this? They don't want to hear that there's green beans. They want to know what kind of green beans these are, or especially lettuces. Our customers are crazy to know, you know, why are these two kinds of lettuce different? And they want to be able to call it by name, and they want to be able to request it by name. Really having those details. They want to know how we grow, specifically how we grow, how we weed, how we harvest, how we handle all of our produce, how we sow our seeds. They want to know if we're doing anything for our pollinators, if we have other plantings going on, if they want to know that their dollar is doing more than buying their food.
That is pretty amazing. Yes, it's really nice to refer to your food as, well, that's Gary's carrots. That's Larry's lettuce or whatever. It makes a difference. It really does. So did your farmers market customers transition into your CSA people?
A number of them did. We were never very good at marketing, so we grew our CSAs through our farmers market contacts. And then when we started our VegEmail program, those came out of both our farmers market contacts and our CSA, because for some people, that custom order system worked better for them than the 20-week commitment.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I hear from, well, especially CSA customers, I mean, this is a bad problem to have, but people say, oh, I've got way too much food. This is way too much. I want to order just a half a bag. I think people are just rediscovering how to eat.
I think that's definitely true. And COVID did gift us with that opportunity. Because so many people had so much more time to be able to focus on food. And that was certainly a bright spot for us as a grower. People wanted to take the time to learn about it. They wanted to have their hands on it. They were willing to do a little more experimentation and produce more of that food out of their kitchen than they have in the recent past.
So how many CSA members do you kind of averagely have for the growing season?
Right. We're a 60 share CSA, which means that we're providing food for probably 75 families, because some of those shares, we don't offer a tiered share size. We offer one share size, one box size. Mm-hmm. And if a family can't use that much food, then we encourage them to split with another household. So we're through CSA, we're serving about 75 households.
And you built a special packing house to accommodate this kind of marketing. Tell us about that and what it looks like and how it works.
We did. So there was just a little tiny shed on the farm when we first started. And in 2011, my dad proposed that we should really start looking at another structure. And we were very fortunate that he was the great supporter of that project. So it's a very traditional barn shape. It's got a 30 by 30 central core, two levels on three quarters of the floor. So we've got loft space for storage. And then it has two lean-to sheds, one on each side. So you get that very traditional barn shape. And one side is our vehicle storage and our bee hardware depot. And the other side was our egg wash room and then contains our walk-in cooler.
Right. So people forget that not only do you have to grow the vegetables, pick the vegetables, then they have to be kind of cleaned and sorted and counted. And so you must have like, some kind of washing station. What kind of equipment did you have to put in for that?
So we have multiple stations because it depends on what we're handling and what time of the year it is. The barn isn't heated, so that makes for some adjustments seasonally. But we've got a 9x13 walk-in cooler that's an interior entrance, so it enters from our main packing area. Mm-hmm. And then on the back side of the barn exterior, we have a large stainless steel sink system with three outlets that we can wash really dirt root crops and things like that, that we don't want to be dragging that dirt into the main packing area. But obviously we can only use that in fairly moderate temperatures. And then inside, we have an Amish style wash sink set up, two wash basins and a rack that produce goes onto, before it gets tub washed or spray washed in our interior sink. And then we also have three of the biggest salad spinners you've ever seen. They hold 30 gallons and they're
restaurant pretty, size.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they hold something like 30 iceberg heads of lettuce. They're very large.
Oh, and for goodness sake.
We use the daylights out of those.
Do you turn those by hand or are they?
They are motorized. They spin so fast. There's no way you could spin them by hand.
That is something, and I hope people that go to the farmer's market or CSA or whatever appreciate when someone not only grows really good stuff, but there is no way to avoid the good Iowa dirt. And there is a process. There's a lot of work to get it there to here.
People expect this. And this all started in California about 25 or 30 years ago with Earthbound Farm offering in the supermarkets the salad in the bag concept, whoa, right? Which was revolutionary at the time. Mm-hmm. They even merited a full write-up story in People magazine about the salad in the bag because it was such a new thing. And of course, it's completely convenient. Has helped, I think, Americans in general eat more vegetables. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a huge part of the labor on the farmer to, get it clean like that and, send it out and all of those fancy greens that you're growing. So, and in the winter, you have to still clean all that lettuce, right?
I do, and it's usually too cold to do it in our barn, so winter harvests have to be scheduled. I start looking a week to 10 days out from a delivery day to see when the harvest window is warm enough that I can A, harvest, and B, wash. So and our high tunnels are great. They're passive solar. We don't heat them. So we have to grow very specific crops in them during the winter that'll handle those cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. But if there's even a little bit of sunshine, the solar gain in those tunnels is amazing. The other day it was 30 degrees outside and it was 85 in my high tunnels. I was working in there in a tank top.
Woo!
Which is glorious in February. Mm-hmm. But for harvesting, I have to have the air temperature in those high tunnels cranked up so that that the plants are thawed out. So even though they can handle cold nighttime temperatures, they will actually freeze. So I have to wait until the air temperature in the tunnel is warm enough that the plants defrost before I harvest them, or they'll just turn to mush. So it's a bit of a logistical thing.
Oh, for goodness. See, it's not just all hearts and flowers and stuff comes up. There's a lot of work to get food from farm to table. We're going to take a little break here, and I'm going to take a time to remind you. This is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Jill Bebout, and she runs a farm in Marion County, Iowa, called Blue Gate Farm. She grows all kinds of good things. Yes, she does. We're going to talk more about CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and all the good stuff that goes into that.
Yeah, we were talking about how Jill packs the greens, because she sells this, you know, the greens in the bag kind of thing. So Jill, you were saying that in the winter, you have to wait till the sun shines enough to heat up the high tunnels, but then you pick it, and how do you wash it and pack it?
So during the winter, if the air temperature is too cold for me to use the packing barn, I keep a wash basin up in the high tunnel with me so that the greens get rinsed there. But then I also have to drip dry them in the tunnels. I don't get to use my fancy spin dryers when I'm up there. So it takes a little more time. I have to watch the moisture content on them a little bit more. But both the greens and I are much happier if we can stay in those warmer temperatures rather than the 31-degree packing bar.
And nothing like having wet lettuce to deal with when it's
cold,
February and January.
Well, and the opposite happens in the summer. I mean, one has to pull the what they call the field heat out of the greens by rushing them into the walk-in cooler, right?
Yeah, that's right. We in the summer we schedule very carefully what our harvest day looks like, because the certain crops, like the leafy greens, they have to come out first thing before the day gets hot. And then we do what's called hydrocooling, which means we put them in a vat of cold water and then drain them out and dry them even before they go in the walk-in. And that gets the heat out of them faster and doesn't raise the temperature of our walk-in cooler. So it doesn't have to work as hard also.
Good. Let's get back to CSA box. What is a, what constitutes a share? How does one decide how big a share is?
That is one of the biggest challenges for CSA farmers.
It's not a universal legal code. Okay.
not even close. So some farms do offer multiple share sizes. We don't. We offer the single size, and we encourage households to split them if it's too much food. But our goal is to have minimum of eight to 10 different items in the box. And I want to give them enough to eat each item at 1 to 2 meals. So If we're sending out green beans, we send out a pound of green beans, which for most people will give them 2 different days worth of serving green beans. But we don't want to give them so much that they have to eat green beans every night, because then they won't like us or green beans.
Well, I was looking at your website. You have a tremendous variety of things that you're growing.
We do. And that's really a key for CSA farms, is that we can't grow 5 crops. We grow at least 70 crops, and we have to be able to rotate those throughout the season as well as throughout the weeks in the boxes, because nobody wants to get beets every week in their box.
Except for me. I would take beets every week.
Yeah, so we really have to have that diversity. And a lot of things, we also grow multiple varieties of each crop, so that we get either different colors or different days to maturity on them, so they appear at different times. But yeah, it's a huge variety of crops for a CSA farm.
Oh, goodness. Can you give us an example of what, I know you do newsletters and you're really good about talking to your customers. What would they get in their first box usually when they get
right in the
box?
Spring, when there's not much,
right? So our CSA opens the first week of June, and the first delivery last year included asparagus, baby choy, golden oyster mushrooms, green garlic, head lettuce, kale mix, and sorrel. And then about half of the CSA got either snap or snow peas.
So some of that's still coming from your high tunnels.
At that point, no. By June, we have turned over to warm weather crops, and they're probably not producing. By June 1st, all of that would have come from the field.
Lucky CSA members.
They're good. However, things don't always work out. What happens if you lose a crop?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's part of the joy of having 70 different crops, is every year we lose something, either to disease, to bugs, to deer, rabbits, you know, bad farming choices, bad seeds. So by having that diversity of crops, that's our insurance policy to having something for our members and our customers every single week. If all we grew was sweet corn, then they'd have, you know, 8 weeks of sweet corn and nothing else.
Ah, but then also your CSA customers realize that, well, 1 year you may not have something, but that's part of the joy of knowing what it's like to be a farmer.
Exactly. And that's also part of the insurance policy for a vegetable farm, is the CSA shares some of the risk. And we, our mantra about CSA is share the risk, share the joy. So there is the risk that we will lose every beet on the farm, and none of us will have beets. But if we have a bumper crop of green beans, then we're going to share in the bumper crop of green beans. And they get it before anyone else does. So they're our priority because they're prepaid.
And so how has switching to this CSA model, how has that affected your finances on the farm?
It's a huge difference for a farm. You know, not many people out there would be willing to work for 6 months of the year before getting paid once. And in traditional farming, that's kind of how it goes. And you just have to trust that there will be pay at the end. With the CSA model, our customers invest a great deal of trust in us, in that they pay up front like you would a magazine subscription. And then we owe them food for 20 weeks. So in the spring, when we have lots and lots of expenses, all of our seed is being ordered, all of our soil amendments, all of our supplies, which are very expensive, we're paying for all of that in the spring. And that CSA money that starts coming in before May 1st, that allows us to pay for all of that up front.
So basically, this model has really allowed you to continue farming.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't imagine being able to cash flow a vegetable farm of our size if all we did was farmers market.
It's pretty catch as catch can because you got a lot of competition at farmers market.
Right. Absolutely. And if it's raining, yeah, maybe people don't come on that day. Now, let me also ask you, we had a dry summer last year. Do you guys have to do irrigation and what do you do?
We do. Because we are such a high value crop farm, I can't afford to not irrigate. So we use drip irrigation on our farm, which is the most environmentally conscientious, I think. It doesn't put any water out into the air, just right at the soil. And but crop zone is on drip irrigation. It doesn't mean we use it every week. We only use it if we need it. But other than our popcorn plot, everything, and we don't irrigate our asparagus. But everything else has access to drip irrigation if we need it.
So you have like a permanent irrigation system laid out in your beds?
Our beds are permanent. Our irrigation we pull for the winter and then lay it back out in the spring. But once
More
it
work.
Goes down, yeah. lots of work. But yeah, once it goes down, then it stays in place for the season and we only pull it up when we're clearing crops in the fall.
Oh boy. So, how does your, like, is it just in the winter you're having your cheese and meat CSA or is it all year round?
So it's all year round now and none of that goes through our farm. So we work in partnership with our other two farms, and those aren't part of our CSA. That's part of our veggie mail program.
Okay.
So
like the cheese guy has to show up with the cheese at the drop off and the meat guy has to. Oh, good. So it's not that much more work on your part.
No, all we do, I create the order forms, the online forms, and all three farms are represented on that order form, but people pay each farm independently and they pick up their product from each farm independently.
Excellent.
So that we all get the ability to maintain those relationships with our customers.
Right. And then also that's less bookkeeping for you.
Yes. And, you know, there are some legal aspects as far as how meat is transported and different, you know, you have to have different things certified. And this way they carry all of that certification burden because it's already part of their operation.
It's liability and insurance and
The community support agriculture model. Now, we're talking about Jill's farm, Blue Gate Farm. There's a lot of different models out there, but it kind of works the same. People pay ahead and they get a lot of it kind of guaranteed over a season. And this concept of working with your neighbors, working with other producers, it's a pretty good way to work things out, especially for farmers that are not in the huge industrial scale size. I mean, it's also evidently your customers like it too. They want to know where things are coming from.
Well, and it's also a model that even though it means the farmer is doing the marketing as well, it also means the farmer recoups the total value. Like if you're growing green beans that you want to sell to Hy-Vee, you have to sell that you can sell a larger volume, but you have to sell it at a discounted price because the Hy-Vee has to make their markup too. So having a CSA and a farmer's market means all the money goes to the farmer.
Very good. Yes. Let's talk a little bit about something else that we might found in your box from your farm in your veggie mail product here. You do preserves. You have fruit. How did you get into that? That's a fun thing to do. It's a lot of work, of course, but yes, tell us about that.
It is, and that's part of our diversity plan and our farm insurance as well, because that's another product line that we can depend on in a year that might be challenging for produce. Our jam-making business was born of an ancient apricot tree.
Very good.
When we moved here, there was an apricot tree that my dad swears was old when he was a kid. And our first year here, it put on a huge crop, glorious, beautiful apricot crop. And my mother-in-law was visiting, and she loved to make apricot jam. And she said, oh, I'll teach you to make apricot jam. And that was it. That was how the jam business was born. And we're very lucky in Iowa that the cottage food laws include the ability for home jam makers to make specified fruit jams in their home kitchen and sell directly to the consumer. Can't sell to restaurants. I can't sell to outlets. But without having a license, I can sell directly to the consumer from my home kitchen.
So you're the jam maker.
Huge. I'm the jam maker. Yep. And during the growing season, every Thursday, I stay in the house and make jam, and my crew works without me. So it's Jamming Thursdays.
What sort of varieties do you do? What sort of jams do you make?
We make just about everything that will grow in Iowa. So we have apples and pears and cherries and grape and plums. And I'm starting to draw a blank on various strawberry and rhubarb and currants and gooseberry. And yeah, we just about make it all.
And how are you marketing the jams?
So that used to go through our, that was a huge product for us at Farmers Market. And now that's offered through our veggie mail program. So for every order cycle, we offer 3 to 4 flavors of jam. And if people want those, then they can choose those.
Very good. I want to mention again, this is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. If you want to find out more about this fine radio program and about this fine community radio station, go to KHOIFM.org. Be about growing food for all these nice people. She has a CSA and other ways to market her food
at Blue Gate Farms.
Very good. Very good. I want to ask you about something else on your farm. You have alpacas. Talk to me about alpacas.
We do. I have a fiber business as well, as that's more of the value added product from our farm. And when I started doing spinning yarn, oh, probably 12 years ago, I was active in the fiber community. And one of my friends in that community was an alpaca breeder. And in 2012, she had decided to retire. So one day she called me and said, would you be the retirement home for a pair of alpacas? We had plenty of pasture, so sure, why not? Abby and Boris came to live on our farm, and we have had them ever since. They gave us some offspring, so we have 3 alpacas. So we are not an alpaca kingdom here by any means. We just have the 3. We have Boris and Abby and Percy, and they are all fawn covered alpaca or colored. Colored on colored alpacas. And so every spring they get sheared and their fiber goes into our fiber business, as well as fiber that we pick up from around the state and around the country.
Another value added thing. Jill, you and Donna were talking about customers and their response to herbs.
Well, first I had a question about your jelly business. Are you combining the herbs and the fruits for some unusual flavor pairings in your jellies?
We do a little bit. We have to be very careful about that because there are some very specific federal laws about things that you can add to jam. And those laws changed in 2012, and we lost about a third of our product line when that happened. Yeah, it was an alarming time. So we have to be pretty careful about that. But we do have a little bit of herb available in our jams. That we also have a seasonal seasonings line that, so we make salts and peppers and more of our herb products go into
another
those.
Thing. Oh, yeah, my right. goodness.
I have a very short attention span, so I have lots of things going on. But so more of our herbs are used in there than in our jams.
And you have a special herbal CSA and a long list of herbs. Lana and I are big into herbs. So tell us about that part of the business.
We do. So that's an add-on for our CSA customers. And they can opt for the herb option. And that's something that they pay for in addition to their base share fee. And if they sign up for that, it usually takes about 3 weeks into the season before our herb share starts, because it takes herbs longer to mature than some of our early produce. But once that kicks off, then they get 3 herbs every week in addition to their regular produce share, where the rest of our CSA gets very limited herbs other than basil. So the main CSA gets basil every other week once the basil season starts. The CSA gets basil every week plus 3 other herbs.
And what? Tell us your list of herbs.
Oh yeah.
Some.
Yeah, it's a long list. So they get everything from regular and garlic chives. We've got 4 to 6 different kinds of mints. They get 3 different kinds of thyme and lavender and lemongrass and sorrel and anise hyssop. We grow 8 different kinds of basil. We also have stevia occasionally. We do edible flowers, so sometimes they get nasturtium, parsley, parcel, tarragon,
sage, probably.
Oh, yep. Lots of sage, borage, marjoram.
Do you guys do lovage?
Although lovage is a grumpy thing. It either takes over or it dies.
Yeah.
It's a little bipolar. sometimes we have lovage, not every
year. Very good. I think people's response to herbs is changing. And I think, as I recall, way back when I was doing farmers market, people were kind of shied away from anything besides salt and pepper. Do you have a good response to your people that want herbs now?
It's gotten better. Herbs have been a little bit rise and fall for us. The thing we discovered at farmers market was that they have to be able to smell them. So we don't package any of our herbs when we're selling them fresh. We keep them in open bundles. And every time someone touches them, then everybody at the table wants that herb because they smell so good and fresh. And I think a lot of people's hesitation with herbs is that so many of us grew up with packaged herbs and packaged spices.
Yeah.
Exactly. And because culturally we weren't used to using them, they got old and they tasted like sawdust by the time we used them. So the revelation of how easy herbs are to use and how much they add to the palate of what we're eating, I think has been really revelatory for people. We also, because we don't have enough going on, we have a bit of a cut flower business with our veggie meal program. And we also include herbs in our bouquets, because it makes the bouquet smell good, mm-hmm. but it's also a value-added aspect in there that people can use some of the bouquet filler in their culinary dishes.
Fantastic.
Very clever.
The idea of you're literally making a living out of your farm and doing it in many, many different ways. Do you see the future of CSAs and how you're marketing. It sounds like you're just going to keep on going. How, what do you think about the future?
I hope I can keep going for as long as I can see ahead. It's a pretty tough way to make a living. It's hard on you mentally. It's very hard on you physically. So my hope is that my body will keep up its end of the bargain as long as I continue to want to do this. And I should be fair, I don't do this alone. I have a very dedicated farm crew that works with me throughout the season. So
I'm sure some of them are younger, right?
They are all much younger than I am. Yes.
Yes. Bless their heart. How big a crew do you have? How many people?
So for the past several years, I've had four, which adds up to about three full-time people. A couple of them do part-time hours. And, currently my crew includes, my crew chief who's been with me. This will be her seventh year. And, so it's been a long time since I've had to hire crew. I've been very lucky that my crew has come back year after year after year, which is a gold mine.
Yes, it is. Good for you. Good for you. Can you, tell us, if people want to contact you? You've been giving us all kinds of good information here, and I don't know about anybody else. I'm kind of hungry. So, how would they contact you about CSA or your veg mail?
Veggie mail. Absolutely. You can find our website at www.bluegatefarmfresh.com. If you miss the fresh, you'll end up at a horse farm. you can also find us under Blue Gate Farm at Facebook and Blue Gate Farm Fresh on Instagram. You are welcome to email us at mail@bluegatefarmfresh.com. And we're happy to chat with you about any of our outlets.
Fantastic. And one thing that seems to work really well for you is social media. So you not only get to talk to people, they get to talk to you. Evidently, you have a good following.
We have a very active Facebook or social media community, and it's great because then they have access to their farmer, whether I'm growing their food or not, year round. So it gives them a window into what happens on the farm all the year through, rather than when they do have contact with us or people from around the state and around the country, around the world. It's great to have that contact and those different perspectives.
Fantastic. Well, we've been talking to Jill Bebout, and she has Blue Gate Farm Fresh, not the one with the horses. She has alpacas instead. Yes. We appreciate you coming on, Donna Lana, and telling us what you know. Thank you for being with us today, Jill.
Thanks so much, ladies. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Good luck in the coming season.
Oh, very good. Yes. Well, here on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we like to pass on wisdom every now and then, and some good people at KHOI Radio pass this bit of culinary wisdom on to us. Donna, share what you found out.
Yes. Okay. Are you ready for this one? If you boil a funny bone, it becomes a laughing stock. That's humorous.
Donna, that's pretty darn good. I like that.
That came from Mike Metz and Pat Schlarbaum. Thank you guys for your...
Good. Also, we've got something new. Tell them about our website or about our email.
Oh, we have a new email for if you want to send us a comment. It's donnalanakitchen@gmail.com.
You can do that. That's good. We would love to hear from you. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live here on Tuesdays and repeated Tuesday evening on KHOI. You can go to that website and there's archives there. There's a picture of us if you just can't get enough of us. There's some recipes. Yes, there is. We've had music today by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station. This is community radio. Yes, it is. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering, as usual, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.